This is the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast, presented by Massage Envy, the first podcast devoted entirely to Arkansas baseball. Featuring insight from Arkansas baseball color analyst Bubba Carpenter. Here's Matt Jones.
Arkansas has won 11 straight games, the Razorbacks, with a series sweep over Kentucky last weekend at Baum Walker Stadium. That closed a 12-1 homestand for the Razorbacks. They'll go on the road for the first time in March this week. They'll go to Columbia to play the Missouri Tigers on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Later in the podcast, we'll have Matt Hobbs, the Arkansas pitching coach, on to talk with us about his pitching staff, also about going back to Columbia. Matt was a former pitcher and assistant coach at Mizzou. This will be his first time back there since he left the Tigers program. Matt Jones with Bubba Carpenter, the radio color analyst for the Razorbacks. And Bubba, Arkansas has now won two straight series by sweeps on the weekend. Of course, they beat Illinois, Chicago the week before and beat it what we think is a decent Kentucky team, at least a pretty good hitting Kentucky team last week at Baum Walker Stadium. Where do you think the Razorbacks are, and what are your thoughts on getting off on the right foot with the series opening sweep in the SEC?
No, I think it was a huge weekend for us. You start out SEC play, and we've talked a lot about, all these games leading up to SEC is really just sort of like spring training. You know, it's to get us ready for what happened this past weekend. And I was really impressed with the way, the team came together, and pitching staff was awesome. The hitting was timely hitting. When they needed a hit, they got it. We're able to scratch out three wins, but boy, the thing that really stood out to me was the pitching. I mean, just the pitching and defense. They say pitching and defense wins, and everyone wants to talk about the offense. They want to talk about the home runs and all that, but I mean, pitching and defense this weekend was just awesome for the Razorbacks. And that's really, if you look back at the numbers, that's why we came away with a sweep. And Kentucky's got a really good hitting team. Defensively, they struggled a little bit, but boy, they came in hot offensively, and the Razorback pitching staff was just able to shut them down.
I think I have these numbers right. Arkansas's starting pitching got 58 outs in the three games against Kentucky. Kentucky's starting pitching got 25 outs in the three games against Arkansas. Errors, Arkansas did not commit an error. Kentucky committed 7. I mean, that goes back to what you're saying. Arkansas was the more disciplined team. I think a lot of times that's really what it comes down to, is the more disciplined teams are the ones who can pitch and play defense. And that can make all the difference in the world.
Absolutely. I go back and I look at everything, kind of inning by inning, pitch by pitch. And that's why I love the game of baseball, Matt, is you can go back and look and second guess stuff and say, well, if this would have happened or if this would have happened. But Friday night, you look at the way Friday night started out the weekend, Connor Nolan goes out there quick, 1-2-3 inning, just shut him down. We come out, what happens? Caden Wallace on a 3-2 pitch, kind of cues it off the end of the bat to the second baseman. He boots it. Well, Stovall gets a base hit up the middle. Michael Turner has a great 10-pitch at bat and draws a walk to load the bases. And that 10-pitch at bat, that's just kind of the error to lead off the inning with Caden Wallace. And then the 10-pitch at bat, that said a lot about the weekend. That kind of set the tone, because you saw a lot of that. You saw some sloppy defense by Kentucky. You saw some great ABs by Razorback hitters. Well, bases are loaded there. And ultimately, Robert Moore ends up getting a pitch down and away, a nasty two-seamer down and away, hits it to left field, gets a base hit, drives in a run. Probably could have scored 2 on that. So we end up only getting 1 run that inning. But it was the way we got that run. You felt like we could have maybe scratched out a couple more, but we got that run. And we made the starting pitcher Stoop throw 35 pitches that inning. And that was kind of the story of it. It just kind of went on from there. And you kind of look at the Saturday was kind of the same way, Matt. You look at we got a freshman on the mound, his first SEC start. The leadoff batter Ritter hits a bomb to center field, and Braden Webb makes an unbelievable catch on it. That can change things right there, just that alone. Hagan Smith isn't someone that really gets rattled, but if you're a freshman in your first SEC start, if Braden misses that ball, it bounces off the wall, that's a triple. You got to run it third, nobody out. Well, then the next two batters, after he catches that, walked on pitches that really weren't – there were a couple strikes mixed in there. The strike zone was a little erratic. this weekend, especially on Saturday. Well, then there's a base hit. There's a ball hit hard up the middle, and Robert Moore made an unbelievable stop on it. Flips the Jalen Battle, gets the 4-6-3 double play to end the inning. That first inning could have gone totally different on Saturday, but the defense stepped up huge right there. Credit Hagan Smith. He did not let the a couple of those missed calls by the home plate umpire. Morris Hodges was the umpire. He didn't let that phase him. You know, he continued to make pitches, got a ground ball up the middle, and that was a great play by Robert Moore, but they were able to turn that double play, and that inning could have been totally different, and the start of that game could have been totally different. That, you kind of saw that throughout the weekend, and once again, stuff like that is why Razorbacks came away with a sweep this weekend. It's just good knows Razorback baseball.
I've got you saying the umpires' names now. You're comfortable with that.
Well, now that they're evaluating them and you know, through the TrackMan data, then I guess I can say his name. But yeah, he missed a lot of pitches. It was really disappointing to see how many pitches were missed. But you know, they didn't, the Hagan didn't let it bother him. I mean, the Razorback pitchers, I mean, that's part of the game. I mean, look, it's a hard job to be an umpire. It's easy for me to sit up there in the booth and say, wow, he missed that. But you really just want a guy to be consistent, really. And you know, hopefully now that they're evaluating the umpires and, you know, maybe putting a little pressure on, hey, to get things right, it'll start to see it cleaned up a little bit.
It was a pretty veteran umpire staff that Arkansas had in Fayetteville last week. Jeff Head, Morris Hodges, Ronnie Teague, those are all pretty common names up at the College World Series. Wanted to ask you about shutting down Kentucky's lineup, because they came into the series, I think they were ranked 10th in batting average, 12th in runs scored, or maybe I've got those flipped. They were 10 and 12 though in those two categories, and they were pretty much shut down for the entire weekend. They finished 20 for 99. That's a 202 batting average. They only scored 6 runs. Their really good hitter, the number 2 hole hitter, Chase Eastep, went 2 for 13, struck out 6 times. This was, I think, a really good Kentucky lineup. Kentucky, for all the problems that they've got defensively and pitching, they can really hit, and they couldn't hit a lick against the Razorbacks.
No, they just kept making great pitches. Eastep was so frustrated. He didn't get a pitch to hit, I don't think, all weekend, Matt, to be honest with you. I mean, it was sliders away. It was two-seam fastballs in. It was, you know, from the righties, it was changeups away, backdoor slide or back leg sliders. He really was just flustered all weekend. And you could see the frustration starting to build as the weekend went on. And look, he's a good hitter. You can tell by his approach, the way he takes pitches, he's a good hitter. We just give him anything to hit all weekend. And we really just kind of maneuvered that lineup. I thought it was awesome the way, you know, the pitching staff maneuvered the lineup. I think Hobbs and Zach Barr, they did a great job putting together a plan of how to get these guys out. But more important, you know, you can have a plan, but, you know, once the game starts, you never know what's going to happen. But, you know, hats off to the pitching staff for going out there and executing that plan and making big pitches when they needed to. And they really did. They shut that offense down.
Connor Nolan finally got to have his Friday night moment. And I wrote about this after the game Friday night. You know, he was going to be the Friday night starter in 2020. When Arkansas went to Mississippi State, and then the season gets shut down as they're about to get on the plane to go down there. Things went wrong for him last year. And so he's had to wait quite a while to be, you know, this number one guy, kind of like what Isaiah Campbell went through, honestly, you know, before he had that great 2019 season. And Connor, he gave up base runners. That's what he does. That's what's going to happen whenever you pitch the contact. But a really solid first SEC Friday night start for him. 6 1/3 innings, 6 hits, just 1 run, 2 walks, and both of those walks came in his last inning as his pitch count was getting really high. Struck out 7, and Bubba, he threw a career-high 109 pitches against Kentucky last week. And it's kind of the same thing we just keep saying about Connor Nolan is he continues to give this pitching staff a really steady presence. And I think that's so important on Friday nights because it just sets up your bullpen for the rest of the weekend if your Friday night guy can give you a quality start. And, you know, really – without any exception this year, he's done that in every start that he's had.
Absolutely, Matt. I thought he was awesome. And it was so good to see him out there on a Friday night on the mound. And, you know, especially to get that 1-2-3 inning, you know, starting out. And he was just good. You know, the thing that makes Connor so good is, and you and I have talked about it. If he needs a strikeout, he can get that strikeout. If he's got a runner at third, less than two outs, he needs to punch somebody out, he's got the stuff to do it. But he just gets outs. And that's, you know, that's what Hobbs likes. That's what DVH likes, is just getting outs. If it's a first pitch out, that's great. If it's a strikeout, that's great. But he just knows how to get outs. And his mound presence out there, his toughness on the mound, it's just a great way to start off a Friday night SEC series, is to have him out there. You know what you're going to get out of him. I thought his breaking ball was really just on point. And I think that what makes him so tough is he can still run that two seamer in on righties, but he's got the curveball, the slider, the cutter. He can use the other half of the plate with those pitches. And then if he needs to, he can front door a breaking ball, a slider right at the guy's front hip, a right-handed batter. So he's just got so many ways to get outs. And more importantly, you know, when they hit him, they don't hit him hard. There's not a lot of hard hit balls. You know, you get every once in a while, you're going to leave a two seam up and they're going to hit it. That's what happens. Like you said, when you pitch to contact, but boy, he really did look good. And it just kind of set the tempo for the rest of the staff for the rest of the weekend.
Dave Van Horn says that when hitters see a pitcher like him, that they're just in swing mode all the time, and it probably frustrates them to face a hitter or to face a pitcher like that. I wonder, when you were facing pitchers that would just consistently throw it in the zone, did it frustrate you when you would see a pitcher that was comparable to Connor?
Absolutely. You know, the thing is it's, I call it a comfortable 0-for-4, because you go out there and you're like, you know, you don't get the same pitch twice in the same zone. And everything's a different speed, and you think you're going to hit it. It looks good coming out of his hand. You're like, yes, yes, yes. Ah, oh, I missed it again. You know, he just misses barrels. And it's like I said, it's that comfortable 0-for-4. And when a guy's in swing mode like that, like you take an aggressive team like Kentucky, that plays. And I said it in the pregame before the game started. I said, that's going to play right into Connor Nolan's hands, because he can throw so many different pitches and get that one pitch out, you know, because these guys they're going up there swinging, and he's got four different pitches he can throw over the plate, and it makes it tough for a team like that. And you know, you really saw it Friday night.
I think what I've been most impressed with Connor is that velocity is better this year, and he's got 38 strikeouts. You know, he's more of a strikeout pitcher than he's been at any other point in his time at Arkansas. 38 strikeouts in 29 and third innings, but he hasn't sacrificed his command or being a strikeout pitcher. I mean, he's at 38 strikeouts and 8 walks right now through 5 starts this year.
No, it's pretty impressive. And you know, the number that I like, you know, the batters they're hitting .250 against him. You know, for a guy that pitches to contact, that's a good number. But the walk to strikeout ratio, yeah, you got to love that. I know the fact that, you know, Hobbs likes to get quick outs. You know, he's trying to get that, you know, 3 pitch out. And Connor's the perfect guy to do that. And he's been phenomenal so far this year.
Whether it be Connor or Jackson Wiggins, they pitched with a lot of base runners against Kentucky. In fact, I think between the 13 innings that those two started, Kentucky had a base runner in 12 of those 13 innings, but they didn't score very many runs against him. I mean, just one run combined against Connor Nolan and Jackson Wiggins, who threw 6 scoreless innings on Sunday. I've been really impressed with how well the starting pitchers in particular, but really the whole pitching staff, because there were others who did it throughout the weekend as well, how they pitched with runners on base. That's been a really strong element to this Arkansas pitching staff this year.
I think it says a lot about the preparation, though, that, you know, Matt Hobbs, Zach Barr, the whole staff, they get these guys prepared out there, and they have a plan. They have a plan, and if a runner gets on base, they stick with that plan, and they just keep executing pitches, and they don't worry about the runner being on base. They keep making pitches and getting outs, and that's what the good guys do. I've been really impressed with Hagen Smith, how he's had a couple of situations where it'd have been real easy for a freshman to get rattled, and it doesn't faze him. You know, I look at the guy that kind of pimped the home run against Hagen. And you've heard me talk enough about it, Matt. You know that I hate that kind of stuff. You know, we're up 8-2. Guy hits a home run, you know, walks around, runs around the bases. Now he's yelling at his dugout, trying to get him fired up. I'm fine with that. But when he steps on home plate, he turns around and, and starts popping off to our catcher, Michael Turner. He looks out and he's eyeballing the Hagan Smith. Hagan didn't do anything the whole game other than dominate them. And, you know, he didn't let that phase him at all. I did see a little bit of in him, a little bit more energy possibly. Maybe, you know, he got fired up a little bit, but he didn't let it affect mm-hmm. his pitching. And that's tough to do as a freshman. And so I was really glad to see that, you know, how he handled that situation, because a lot of times you can kind of lose control right there and try to do a little bit too much, try to make too perfect of a pitch. He didn't let it phase him. You know, it would have been nice if he would have let one run inside on that guy next time he got up. But, you know, every once in a while a ball slips inside, but we can't talk about that. But no, I just thought, I've been really impressed with him and just kind of the way his mound presence has been and how he's handled himself as a freshman. It's real impressive.
Well, Dave Van Horn, he talked about that situation, about Hunter Jump stepping on the plate, looking back at Hagan Smith. And then, you know, he mentioned the very next at bat, Daniel Harris grounds back to the pitcher, and Hagan Smith looked like he was trying just to race him to the base, and then finally flipped it to his first baseman, struck out the next pitcher, and was real fired up going back to the dugout. He said he loved to see that because it shows him that that's a freshman who's not going to back down from a challenge. He loved the response from Smith in the next two at-bats after that home run.
Oh, absolutely. I did too. And once again, we talked about that on the air. And another thing that I really like, I like Michael Turner standing up. And Michael, you know, who knows exactly what Michael said? Well, we kind of know what Michael said, but, you know, basically just said, Hey dude, look at the scoreboard, shut your mouth, go back to the dugout. You know, Michael had Hagan Smith had his back right there. And that's what you want out of a catcher. A guy's not afraid to say, hey dude, shut your mouth and, you know, look at the scoreboard. And, you know, I'm not saying that's, I don't know, I'm not going to quote Michael what he said, but, you know, basically to that effect. Yeah, probably not. But, you know, you got to have a feel for the game. And some guys just don't have a feel for the game. That's a perfect example right there of a guy that just didn't have a clue. He's talented, but have a feel for how to play the game. But Hagan handled it awesome. I thought our catcher, Michael Turner, handled it awesome. And it really was to see that emotion out of Hagan, you know, in those next two batters. I thought it was awesome.
I don't know if I've ever seen this in a series, Bubba, but you talk about how Arkansas outplayed Kentucky in all phases. All three final scores, Arkansas scored three more runs or three times as many runs as Kentucky did. It was 9-3 on Saturday night, 6-2 in the opener, and 3-1 in the last game. And I don't know if I've ever seen that in a series before.
We just outplayed them. I mean, we really did. Yeah, we found a way to score runs. And then when the defense needed to, it stepped up and made a big play. I know Lanzilli made a great catch out in right field. If that ball gets down, it was a sinking line drive down the right field line. You know, that changes the game. I mean, there were just so many little things that really did affect the game. You look at like a dirt ball read. People overlook little things, Matt, like the dirt ball read. Well, when Chris Lanzilli in Saturday's game, dirt ball read gets the second with two outs. Jalen Battles hits a ground ball that the third baseman probably should have made a play on, kind of clinked off his glove, got by the shortstop out into left field, and Chris scores. You know, if he doesn't dirt ball read there, he's at first base. Third baseman's probably playing in a different position, makes that play, flips it to second for the third out of the inning. Little things like that. I mean, and that's Razorback baseball. And when I say we outplayed them on every aspect of the game, I mean, little things like that go a long way with me. And we do those things. A lot of other teams don't. And that's why at the end of the day, we're the Razorbacks.
A lot of times by this point in the season, Arkansas has changed up its starting pitching rotation for some reason or another. It could be because there's an injury. It could be because a pitcher is just not getting the job done, or maybe somebody else has improved their game a lot since the preseason when that, you know, week one rotation was put together. It's really interesting to me though, to see that they are sticking with the same rotation now for their sixth consecutive weekend. I think that is got to be really pleasing to the coaching staff, that not only did you identify three really good starters in the offseason, but they're also pitching to the point that you want to keep them in that rotation. And they're pitching really well. This is two straight weeks where every one of Arkansas's starting pitchers, I should say they're three starting pitchers because they played a four-game series against UIC, but where Wiggins and Noland and Smith have given them quality starts of at least six innings, and I mean, they're really setting things up well for their bullpen, not having to overuse their bullpen right now on these weekends.
It's been huge. I mean, when's the last time, Matt, you could look and say, you know, for several weekends in a row that you're getting this much length out of starters? Now, the only downfall to that, and it's, I guess it's a good problem to have, is we got a lot of arms out there in the bullpen that aren't getting on the field, you know, especially with this midweek game getting canceled this week, the Wednesday game. You know, there's a lot of guys that need to throw that just aren't getting a chance to get out on the field. Now, that's a good problem to have, but, you know, it's something that we still want to get those guys some innings out there in the bullpen. But, hey, if we can get six innings out of our starters every weekend, hey, we'll take that every time.
Arkansas goes to Missouri this week. They are third in the SEC in ERA with a 2.95 ERA. They are third in the SEC in opponent batting average at 208. Those are really strong numbers. You know, I thought that as much attention as paid to the starting pitchers, really some of the star pitchers of the weekend were Zebulon Vermillion, who pitched three scoreless innings in game two. Evan Taylor came out of the bullpen a couple of times, including for 1 2/3 innings on the Friday night after Connor Nolan had gone out, got out of a little bit of a jam there with the base runners that he inherited, did give up a solo home run in the final game of the series. And then Brady Tigert pitched two really strong innings. Again, like all the other pitchers on that day, pitched around some base runners. But I think he's starting to show them something on the back end that they really like.
I think so. And I thought Zeb was huge. I mean, his three innings that he threw Saturday, I mean, they were huge, three no-hit innings. And that was dominant stuff. I mean, he was absolutely dominant. He just abused those hitters. You know, that fastball and that slider that he's throwing, he threw it, mixed in a couple of splitties, but I think he bounced both of them. They weren't in the zone, but boy, he had that fastball mid-90 range. He was anywhere from 94 to 97 is the fastest one I saw. And the slider just really looked good. And to have a veteran out there doing that is huge for us, Matt. You know, it's really good for him to step up. We know he's got the stuff to do it. It's just a matter of him being consistent with it. And Evan Taylor, I bragged on him. For one, I said, look, with that new arm slot, the guy could be a closer. He could be a one-out guy. He could come in and get lefties or righties out, whatever you need out of him. So he's just been huge. And, you know, he gave up the first hit, which was a home run. First hit he's given up this year. And I just ran into a 3-2 slider, you know. To pretty much the ball just ran into his bat. And if that pitch would have been anywhere else, it's probably a ground ball pop up or a swing and miss, but it just happened to run into his bat. But Evan's been huge. But I was impressed with Brady Tigert closing out that game on Sunday, because it seems like in baseball, it always comes down in especially in the SEC to the middle of that lineup. So he had to go through the middle of that lineup to get that save and close out that game in the ninth. And boy, he looked great out there. No nerves. He looked like he was in total control and just really made some good pitches.
He was in command of the press conference afterward, too. What a great interview that he's turned out to be. We'll talk more with Matt Hobbs about his pitching staff a little bit later. The Whole Hog Baseball Podcast is sponsored by Massage Envy, voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Visit Mike and his staff in Tuscany Square at 2603 West Pleasant Grove Road in Rogers, or in Fayetteville at 3557 North Shiloh Drive. Massage Envy has services for everyone. MassageEnvy.com.
Massage Envy, with clinics in Rogers and Fayetteville, has been awarded Northwest Arkansas's Best Day Spa and Best Massage. One of the reasons is our care for athletes, both serious and recreational. We now offer rapid tension relief sessions using a high-caliber vibrating tool and total body stretch sessions like the ones used by the PGA. Both of these new services can be combined with the always popular deep muscle treatment. So whether you compete or just want to relax, there is no place better than Massage Envy.
WholeHogSports.com has the largest, most experienced staff of reporters covering sports in Arkansas. Football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. You'll find it at WholeHogSports.com. The website includes up-to-minute news, daily commentaries, and award-winning photography from the staffs of Hogs Illustrated and the Democrat Gazette. For subscriptions, call 1-800-757-6277. That's 1-800-757-6277. Or visit us online today. WholeHogSports.com.
You know it never goes out of style? A great burger. And for a long time now, the best burgers around have been made at CJ's Butcher Boy. I've been stopping at their Russellville location for years to enjoy a double with bacon, cheese, and all the fixings. Well, the fries are always made fresh, and their shakes are made with real premium ice cream. And now that CJ's Butcher Boy has a Fayetteville location, too, on Weddington, you can bet I'll be there a lot more. CJ's Butcher Boy in Russellville and Fayetteville. When all you do are burgers, they have to be the best.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Now let's look at this week in the SEC, presented by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers.
Arkansas was one of three SEC teams that swept on opening weekend in conference play. The Razorbacks, of course, swept Kentucky by a combined score of 18-6. The other sweeps in the league were Vanderbilt over Missouri and Tennessee over South Carolina. Series wins last week. Georgia won 2 of 3 over Mississippi State. Really entertaining series in Athens. Texas A&M won the first 2 over LSU. Nearly swept them, but LSU came back and won game 3. Ole Miss won 2 of 3 over Auburn. That was a weird series. Ole Miss blew them out in game 1. Auburn blew them out in game 2. Ole Miss came back with a blowout in game 3. It was a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. And Florida beat Alabama. Alabama walked off the Gators in game 3 to salvage a game in that one. This week's series, Georgia's at Kentucky, LSU's at Florida, Vanderbilt at South Carolina, Alabama at Mississippi State, Auburn is at Texas A&M, and Bubba, the one that a lot of people are going to have their eyes on, Tennessee goes to Ole Miss. Who are you cheering for in that one?
Boy, I tell you what, can we just hope for a rainout? I tell you, I like what Tony Vitella has done. I like with his hitters, his pitching staff, everything. You know, I still have a hard time with what happened at home plate last year with him at DBH. I wish that would have never happened because I was a big Tony Vitella fan until then. But, you know, I can't pull for Ole Miss, so I guess I got to give Tennessee the edge. But, boy, you look on paper right now, Tennessee is – they're really good. I mean, you look at the three teams that swept and, you know, goes back to pitching and defense. They're 1, 2, and 3 in the conference in pitching. Tennessee's first, Vandy second, Arkansas's third. Tennessee and Vandy are 1 and 2 in hitting also. Tennessee's hitting – they're hitting 341. As a team, they got 59 home runs already this early in the year. So they've been crushing the ball. But, you know, they haven't played a really tough schedule. They haven't played the schedule the Razorbacks have. You know, Arkansas's leading in fielding percentage, which, you know, no surprise there. I mean, we got the best defense in SEC. It's not even close. So, you know, the thing that we talked about Arkansas' strength, Matt, was going to be the hitting. You know, we're 12th in the SEC and hitting a 276 batting average right now, but that number is going to go way up. Cream rises to the top. That number is going to keep going up as we get through, you know, throughout the season. We know what we've got in that lineup, but it's interesting to see right now. Tennessee's really just dominated in pitching numbers and hitting. Pitching numbers, they're 1.993 ERA. And so they're really getting it done. Opponents are hitting 173 against them right now. So they're dominating on both sides of the game right now. But like I said, I think when they get into the heart of their schedule, those numbers are going to change a little bit.
You know, the Vitello-Van Horn thing, it's kind of interesting. I think those two are past it. I think the people that are hanging on to that are the fans who saw it. You know, I think they were past that by the time they got to Hoover a couple of weeks later last year. You mentioned Tennessee. They did play Texas, so they played a really good team. In fact, I think that may be their only loss right now. I don't know that Ole Miss has played a very strong schedule either. So it'll be really interesting to see how those two match up against what are supposedly really good competition, or, you know, does one fold in that series? I'm really interested to watch those games. SEC teams in the coaches poll this week, Vanderbilt overtook Ole Miss at number 1. The Rebels lost to Southeastern Louisiana in the midweek last week. So for people hand-wringing over Arkansas's loss to Southeastern Louisiana, Ole Miss lost to them too. Vandy 1, Ole Miss 2. Arkansas's number 4. Tennessee's number 5. Florida's number 7. Georgia moved up to number 14 with that series win over Mississippi State. And LSU dropped down to number 18 after losing to Texas A&M. The SEC Report's brought to you by CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers. Best burgers in two towns. Visit the original at 2803 North Arkansas Avenue in Russellville, or the newest location at 3484 West Weddington Drive in Fayetteville, just minutes from Baum Walker Stadium. Skip the line and order online or download the app in your app store. CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, when all you do are burgers, they have to be the best. And Bubba, you talked about Arkansas and their hitting numbers, and you go back to this homestand where they went 12-1. During that time, their batting average improved 63 points, I believe, to 276. They were down at the very bottom of the SEC coming into the month of March. Their slugging percentage improved almost 100 points, and their on-base percentage improved almost 70 points. We talked about the comfort level that a team has playing at home, and it sure seemed like with Arkansas, these last 3 weeks getting to spend at Baum Walker Stadium really got the team right after a rocky first couple of weeks, especially that trip down to Round Rock.
I think so. And, you know, Baum Walker is just good medicine for these guys. And you get back, and baseball players are creatures of habit. They like being at home. They like having a routine. You know, when they're here at home, they have a set diet. You know, they know what kind of food they're eating. Blaine Kinsley can still get their works in. It's just really about developing a routine and being consistent when they're here at home. It's so much easier to do that. Not to mention the fan support that we get, even on some of the bad days when the weather was just horrible out. I mean, we had good crowds and the guys feed off of that. They like performing for the fans here at Baum Walker. And it's just a matter of just being at home and being comfortable. I know when you step in a batter's box at your home stadium, it just feels different. You just feel comfortable. And when you step in the box and you're comfortable, you know, good things are going to happen. Same with the pitching staff. You know, you step on that mound, even though they're all the same, you step on your mound here at Baum Walker, it just feels different. It feels right. And that's a good thing.
Not the best pitching that they've seen over the last 3 weeks. Of course, though, the pitching wasn't superb the first 2 weeks that they saw, at least not consistently. The Stanford pitcher was certainly really good. But over the last 3 weeks in Fayetteville, Bubba, here's some of the numbers. 19 home runs, one triple, 27 doubles, and 75 walks in 13 games.
Hell yeah, go Hogs, right? It's pretty good numbers. And, you know, a lot of that's been with a wind still blowing in. You know, there's been a couple games where the wind started to drift out a little bit, but those numbers could be a little bit higher. I can think of a whole lot of hard hit balls that got held up in that wind that would have influenced numbers a whole lot more.
Braden Webb and Robert Moore got going last week. Webb hit 3 home runs. We talked last week on the podcast about the grand slam that he hit to end the Grambling game last Tuesday. Then he hits 2 more home runs during the Kentucky series. And then Robert Moore was just on base the whole weekend during the Kentucky series. He had 3 RBI on Friday, had 3 RBI on Saturday, manufactured a big run, turned out to be a really big run in that 3-1 win over Kentucky on Sunday, where he walked, stole second, went to third on a throwing error by the catcher, and then he came home on a really good squeeze play by Jalen Battles. He seems like he's really got it turned around, and Braden Webb too. And Arkansas needs those two to be really good hitters for them to be able to go far this year.
I think so. And you talk about Braden Webb. What was really impressive Sunday, his at bat before he hit the home run, Jalen Battles led off with a single, led off the inning. Braden Webb comes up. He lays off the 2 really good changeups away. One was a strike, one was a ball. They were both really good pitches. You know, when you're going good, you see that pitch, you lay off it, you take it, you get a fastball to drive. That's what he did right there. And then he got a 1-1 fastball and hammered that ball. It was 111 miles an hour off the bat. That's the hardest hit ball I've recorded so far this year, 442 feet, which I don't care about that. As long as it goes over the fence, that's all that matters. But good hitters are defined by what they don't swing at. And he took those 2 changeups. You know, a bad hitter goes up there and rolls over that first changeup, 5-4-3 double play. You know, he took those pitches, got a fastball and crushed it. And then to the safety squeeze, I mean, and Robert Moore getting on base, you know, stealing second and advancing to third, and Jalen with that safety squeeze, that's a huge play right there. And there's really no defense for it. There's really not. If a guy gets the ball down on the ground, if the runner third is reading down angle, doing his job, there's really no defense for it. They tried to come in. I think Plasiak tried to come in and make the play at home, which he wouldn't have had a play. It was just a perfect bump by Jalen Battles. But those are the little things. And I know people get tired of me saying it, but that's Razorback baseball right there. You know, we can beat you with long ball or we can beat you with small ball either way. And that's kind of what we did on Sunday's game. And it's just so good to see. And Robert Moore, he said it, Matt, in the press conference. I want to say, I think you were the one that asked him the question.
Yeah, I don't think he liked my question. Know.
Well, he's a competitor, you know, he's a competitor and, you know, he basically, you know, I don't want to quote him, you know,
I've got exactly, it right here. Let me just say,
okay.
I asked him how good, this was after the game Friday night when he had three RBI, had three base hits. I said, how did it feel to break out of, or I can't remember exactly how I phrased it, but the essence of the question was, how did it feel to have that performance after the last couple of weeks? Because, you know, he'd been slumping a little bit. And he just said, matter-of-factly, quote, "We started SEC play today, and players always show up when they need to."
That's right. Hey, hats off to Robert Moore. And look, he's a competitor. He's confident. He knows he's good. You know what you're going to get out of him every inning. And he's absolutely right, man. When SEC plays start, that's when the real players show up. And boy, he showed up big all weekend. And I love his answer. And some people might look at it and say, well, that's a cocky answer, but it's a confident answer.
Yep.
And that's the way you got to be. To be good at this game, you got to know you're good. You got to have a little bit of swagger. You got to have confidence. Guys feed off of that. And I love that answer. And that's just one more reason why I love Robert Moore.
I thought Peyton Stovall has really come on of late and had a great week last week, both in the Grambling State games and in the first two games against Kentucky. He didn't get a hit on Sunday, and that broke an 11-game hitting streak for him. But he's played so well. And the other thing, Bubba, that I thought was really interesting was seeing him get that opportunity at second base during the Grambling games whenever they gave Moore the day off one day, and then they put Moore at shortstop so they could give Battles a day off the next. And he looked really good at second base, and that looks like that's going to be his position of the future once Moore goes pro at the end of this year.
I think so. He didn't have a lot of hard plays. He made a couple of plays that were – not easy plays. They were slightly difficult plays, but he made them look real easy. What I like are those choppers, a few balls that were hit up the middle, and just his natural instinct to come in, get around the ball just enough to make that throw to first, and just made it look easy. You look at his footwork, you know, I say all the time, you know, good infielders, you look at Jalen Battles, he looks like he never gets a bad hop. Well, it's because his footwork's so good. He puts his body in the right spot, and watching Peyton Stovall, that's what he did at second base. And so, you know, he's going to be a good one there. And at the plate, I thought he had kind of a tough luck weekend. He had two or three calls on him. A couple of call third strikes that weren't strikes. I mean, one was several inches off the plate, and I get it. That's baseball. It's going to happen, but he's got really good discipline at the plate. He knows the strike zone. He probably knows it too well. And I think he's going to get rang up on pitches just because he knows the strike zone so well. And I think sometimes he knows it better than the home plate umpire, unfortunately. And so I think that could, you know, but it's a good problem to have, but I really do like him in that two hole, and he got some big hits for us this weekend and had some really big at bats.
I heard Dave Van Horn say something similar to that the other day about that he's going to take a lot of called strike threes, but because of how well he knows the strike zone. But he said that over the totality of the season, it's probably going to pay off for him being patient on those two strike pitches more often than it's going to hurt them with him striking out looking.
I think so. And I think he'll start to get the benefit of the doubt from the umpires once they realize, hey, this kid knows the strike zone. And I think you see it at Major League Baseball a lot. Guys that don't strike out a lot, that know the zone, that don't chase pitches out of the zone, they get the benefit of the doubt on that close pitch. And I think you're going to see that happen with Peyton Stovall. I think you already see it with Caden Wallace. He can take some borderline pitches and he gets the benefit of the doubt. First of all, he takes pitches the right way. If you take a pitch and you're falling all over the plate, they're going to call that a strike. But if you take a pitch like, yeah, that's a ball. I know that's a ball. And it's a borderline pitch. If you take it with confidence, umpires will – they'll give you that call. They'll give you the benefit of the doubt there. And I think that's going to happen eventually to Peyton Stovall. I think right now as a freshman, though, you know, he's gonna get rang up a few times on that pitch. But I think the cream rises to the top. And I think when it's all said and done, he'll start getting the respect that he deserves from these home plate umpires.
We talked about defense earlier in the podcast, but I wanted to go back to this point, and it's that the middle of the defense, and that's what people talk about all the time, the catcher, the shortstop, the second baseman, the center fielder. That was so good for Arkansas last year. They lost Opitz. They lost Christian Franklin. And you lose experience. You lose some leadership. You lose some of the camaraderie and familiarity that those guys had with the team. But you know, I'm not so sure that they're not as good this year with Michael Turner and with Braden Webb. You know, it's kind of like they've just plugged in new pieces to those positions. And that was really a big part of that series against Kentucky. Webb made a lot of great plays in center field. Moore and Battles were just, I mean, they look like the Harlem Globetrotters on grass out there the other day with some of the plays that they were making. Just an incredible defense up the middle right now for Arkansas.
Who would have ever thought we could look back after last year and say, wow, we're just as good or better this year than we were last year up the middle. You know, now I love Casey Opitz. He did a great job. He was a leader. He stole a lot of strikes last year. He was really good at, you know, just receiving the ball, presenting it to the umpire, getting that called strike on a pitch off the plate. But then I see a lot of similarities to Michael Turner. I see him as a leader. I think guys respect him and look up to him. He's just got that veteran, just that presence about him. Braden Webb's awesome in center. I watch him move to balls, and boy, he's right on point with his first step. He's got that instinct out there that good outfielders have. The play he made Saturday was an unbelievable catch on the ball Ritter hit. And I was afraid he hurt his shoulder when he hit that wall because he went into the wall hard. And then up the middle with Jalen Battles and Robert Moore, there's not a better combination in the country than those two. And they just make it look so easy and so routine. I like watching them take infield before the game. And you compare, I was talking to Phil Elson about it in the booth. I said, compare our infield to when the other team goes out there and takes their pregame infield. It's not even close. Those two guys are head and shoulders above everyone else that I've seen so far in the SEC. And there's not a better combo than those two.
Let's talk a little bit about Missouri, Bubba. They come into this series this weekend. They're 12-5 overall. They're 0-3 in the SEC. They were swept at Vanderbilt on opening weekend. And I think a lot of people might look at the Vanderbilt result and say, oh, well, this is just same old Missouri. I'm not so sure that's the case. I mean, you look at their strength of schedule, it's top 45, top 55, somewhere in there nationally. I don't have the updated strength of schedule in front of me, but this is a team that's played some decent or mid-major teams to this point in the year. They played Arizona State. Arizona State's a little bit down this year compared to where they are most years. But you look at Missouri, they've got three players who are hitting 350 or better. They've got four players who are hitting 323 or better. They've got some decent pitching numbers. I think this is a tougher Missouri team than we are accustomed to seeing most years.
Going to Vanderbilt, that's a tough place to go. And you look at their runs scored. Friday night, they got beat 15-2. Saturday, 6-0. Sunday, 7-4. In Friday's game, they only had three hits. Saturday's game, they had three hits. They got nine on Sunday, which typically you see more hits on the Sunday game. But I think a lot of that was just good Vanderbilt pitching, to be honest with you. And if you look at their offensive numbers, they stack up with the Razorbacks pretty good. 297 batting average. We're at 276. We've got the edge in home runs, 23-16. They haven't hit a lot of home runs this year. They've got we're the slugging percentage. We've got them beat slightly, 458-446. On base percentage, really close. They don't strike out much. They put the ball in play. They steal a lot of bases, 33 for 36 in stolen base attempts, Matt. But every team that's come in here that's had a lot of stolen bases, we've shut that down. And there's two reasons why. One is our pitching staff is so good at holding runners on. They do a phenomenal job of holding on. And then Michael Turner behind the plate shuts it down on his end. And so I don't really worry that much about stolen bases because I think we're going to shut that down. But I think the edge we have is in pitching. If you look at their earned run average, they're 4.78 earned run average. We're at 2.95. Mm-hmm. They give up more hits per inning. You know, they haven't given up. They've given up a few more runs than us. They've given up 88 runs. We've given up 57. But I think if you look at the pitching side of it, that's where we really have the advantage against these guys. I think we're going to score runs against them. And I think it's going to be a good weekend, but I really think our pitching staff and Vandy's pitching staff are similar. You know, we get a lot of strikeouts. We don't give a lot of free passes. We're not throwing a lot of balls. So I really think we're going to go in there and do fine against them. Now, they do have the home field advantage. I think they play a little bit better historically at Mizzou, and so we'll see what happens with that. But I think it's going to be a good series.
They haven't played a whole lot at home this year. They're just 4-1 there, you know, because of the weather. I say it's kind of funny. They're the closest campus to Fayetteville in the SEC, but those 4.5 hours between Fayetteville and Columbia, it feels like you go to a different world weather-wise this time of year, and they have to go on the road and play a lot of games early in the season. So they haven't played at home very much. To your point on the pitching, you know, where I think they really struggle pitching-wise is in their bullpen. They've got some bullpen arms who have shut teams down to this point in the year, but you go back and you kind of look closer at the Vanderbilt series, and they got blown out in game one, but game two, Vanderbilt's just up 2-0 going into the sixth inning. They get a big sixth inning and kind of pull away. Same thing with game three. Missouri led Vanderbilt 4-3 in the seventh inning of that game, and then Vanderbilt gets a 3-run seventh and they pull away. That's really where I think maybe the biggest difference between these two teams is not just the pitching, but in particular in the bullpen.
I think so, but that plays right into our hand because we seem to get better offensively as the game goes on. So I think that plays right into our hand because our hitters, I think as we get deeper in the game, the more pitches we see, the better we get. And so I think, once again, advantage Arkansas right there. And I think one thing that could be a factor, though, you look at the wind at Mizzou. If it's two different ballparks, you know, it can play really big or really small, depending on how the wind is. I think if we get a windy day where the wind's blowing in, that hurts us because, you know, we tend to hit a lot of deep fly balls. Wind's blowing out, I think we're going to score a lot of runs. I think so. You just have to look at that. I haven't gone that far ahead and looked at the weather yet. I'm sure DVH and the staff has. But, you know, for me, I always look at what the weather's like, where the wind's going to be blowing in position of where how the field's positioned.
I've got you here. I've got you, Bubba. We've got calm winds on Saturday and Sunday, and Friday winds gusting up to 25 miles an hour. So Friday might be the day to watch with the winds.
Well, is that 25 blowing in or is that 25 blowing out, Matt? It makes a big difference with our hitters. Hey, I tell you what, it's funny. In every town that I ever played in back in the day, I could tell you that where the baseball field was situated, which direction it was pointing. So I could tell you how the wind affected every stadium. I couldn't tell you the restaurants. I couldn't tell you anything about the hotel, but I could tell you where the field faced and which way the wind predominantly blows. So it's kind of funny.
All right, Bubba, based on my Google Maps, it looks like the wind's going to be blowing out Friday at 24 miles an hour.
Go Hogs. That's going to help our offense right there. Could be a high scoring game. I do know that Friday night, didn't they give up 4 runs in the first against Vandy? Yep. So, Friday night could be a good night to be a Razorback hitter.
You know, Arkansas has got a lot better power numbers than Missouri does. Torin Montgomery, Ty Wilsmeyer, Ross Lovich, and Josh Day are the really good hitters in that lineup, but none of them really have great power numbers. Day has 5 home runs this year. You look at their slugging percentage, it's just .446. This is really a single-double type team.
I think so. I think – but you look at Beezer, when he played, he was more that type of player. He wasn't a power guy. And so I think you tend to recruit that type of player. And, you know, back in the day when Dave Van Horn, you know, he used to recruit guys that were more speed oriented. You know, it was all about pitching, defense, and speed. And now, you know, Dave kind of goes after those big athletes that have the speed, but they can drive the ball out of the yard. It's kind of funny how he's kind of changed a little bit in his philosophy, and he's gone more to the power side of it, where Mizzou is more still just your get on base, steal bases, kind of create some havoc on the base paths. And you know, so it's two different styles of baseball.
Massage Envy has been voted the best day spa and best massage in all of Northwest Arkansas. Great therapists and estheticians go along with a new service that I am truly excited about. Rapid Tension Relief uses a special tool that will melt the tension and soreness away. Trust me, you will not be disappointed in the results. I highly recommend this feature along with a total body stretch assisted stretch program. Whether you are competing at a high level or just want to relax, these services are for everyone. Massage, rapid tension relief, total body stretch, deep muscle treatment massage, you choose. Or you can try any combination of those. So the next time you're feeling tight, make sure to call my friends at Massage Envy.
Want more coverage of your home team? Download the Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Check out the Fan Zone and get up-to-the-minute videos, podcasts, and features on football, basketball, baseball, recruiting, and more. Search for Whole Hog Sports on Apple TV, Roku, and Amazon Fire at home. And take it with you on the go by downloading it for your mobile device in your app store. The Whole Hog Sports Video On Demand app. Get it today.
Grease Pig, this is Mike.
Coming in hot, so I can just stay in my vehicle during my oil change?
That's right. The Grease Pig wants to help keep you safe, so now you can stay in your vehicle during your oil change.
These guys are working like a pit crew.
That's part of our 17-point inspection, where we check your belts and hoses, we check and fill all your fluids, and offer full repair on all vehicles. And, of course, we use Castrol products.
Why do I smoke coffee?
You know our waiting room is still open.
And give up front row seats to my own oil change? No, thank you. You're doing awesome. Mike, I think I'm making them uncomfortable.
Get into the Grease Pig, your local automotive specialist for over 20 years.
Welcome back to the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. Let's take a look at the week ahead, presented by Grease Pig.
Arkansas and Missouri will play three times this weekend in Columbia. First game Friday night at 6 o'clock, second game Saturday at 2, and the finale will be Sunday at 1. Games 1 and 3 will be shown on SEC Network Plus, and on Saturday afternoon, the Razorbacks and Tigers will play on the SEC Network. The Week Ahead is brought to you by The Grease Pig. For 20 years, they have specialized in serving UA students, faculty, and staff with two locations in Fayetteville on College Avenue and MLK Boulevard. The Grease Pig has experience for all your repair needs and, of course, complete service oil changes staffed with ASE-certified master technicians. They also provide tires and alignment services at their location on College Avenue. The Grease Pig, it's all about taking care of you, and they're a proud supporter of the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast. As promised earlier, we're joined now by Matt Hobbs, the fourth-year Arkansas pitching coach. The Razorbacks off to a great start pitching-wise this year. And Matt, we appreciate you taking time to join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Hey, so I want to ask you about your pitching staff, and in particular the starters and, you know, the performance that they've given you the last couple of weeks. It's so hard, I think, a lot of times to envision your starters going as deep into games this early in the year for, you know, a number of different reasons. But it seems like what you've guys got going with Connor and Hagen and Jackson Wiggins seems to be working really well right now.
Yeah, I think that the best thing about those guys is, which kind of what you mentioned, is they stand out there on the mound. They're on the mound in the fifth, sixth, seventh inning. And that frees up your bullpen significantly to be able to really make good decisions in the pen instead of just trying to figure out how to get to the sixth or the seventh inning so you can use the back end of your pen. And, you know, with Connor and Hagen and Jax, that's what they've done, is just kind of stand out there on the mound. And also, you know, they've been really good. It's not just like they're out there pitching. They've been really great. And they've had a battle through some adversity. So certainly – you never really expect that you're going to get all three guys, like this past weekend, you get all three guys, you know, through the sixth inning. I think that's pretty rare in our game these days, but I'm certainly happy with the way those guys have been throwing.
And with Connor, I guess Jackson too, both of them have pitched so well with runners on base, or at least they did in the Kentucky series, and Connor's really done it throughout the season. What do you think it says about the two of them that they've been able to do that?
I mean, they're both tough kids, and they both really don't get rattled by those types of things in terms of having guys on base or having runners in scoring position. And they also both have pitches that can get them out of these kinds of jams. You know, Connor with his breaking stuff can get him out of those types of jams because he's got elite breaking stuff. And then Jackson obviously has the big arm, and you know, over the last couple of weeks, it's been more off speed stuff for him. So both those guys have done a really good job of pitching in traffic. Hagen too. Obviously we would like them to not pitch in traffic. So certainly something that we need to work on and get better at is eliminating some of the base runners, because some of it's just, we are adding those base runners and we're not making them earn it as much as I would like them to, especially with Jax and Hagen. They sometimes will just put a guy on base from kind of randomly. And then all of a sudden we're in the middle of an inning and makes it a lot tougher on yourself. So it's certainly something we all need to work on as a pitching staff, to be able to limit some of these base runners, but they've done a really good job of battling through some adversity when they're out there and making huge pitches. But all three guys have done a great job.
Bubba and I have talked about this quite a bit with Jackson Wiggins. The fact that, I guess, up until he was about 17 years old, he was a thrower. He wasn't really a pitcher. And that over the last maybe 3 years is when he's really started to develop his off-speed pitches and not just try to blow it past people. How much are you seeing that right now with him? And it looks to me like maybe – different than last year, where he was starting off a lot of batters with fastballs that he's more comfortable to go with his off-speed pitches and those first pitches of at-bats.
I think that Jackson's very aware that it's really tough to get through an SEC lineup with 1.5 pitches, which is kind of what he was doing last year with the fastball and a changeup that was good, but not always in the zone, and then a slider that was okay, but not always in the zone. And he spent a lot of time working on these pitches and has done a great job developing them over the course of the last 18 months with us. So I can say that he's definitely improved in all areas as a pitcher. Like, everything he does is better than the day that he got here. A lot of that's credit to him in terms of developing these pitches and working on them. You know, it's easy to, you know, change a grip in a bullpen for one day and then have it not stick, but he's done a really good job of his maintenance on those pitches. So he can do the things like you're talking about, like starting guys off with first pitch slider, first pitch changeup, and being able to get them out in multiple ways. I think the E-Step kid from Kentucky was a really good hitter. I think he got him out with like at least two different pitches over the weekend to finish at bat. So it's a good thing to see with Jackson, because that's the only thing he needed in his evolution as a pitcher is to develop quality off-speed stuff. And I think he's definitely on the way to doing that.
And your whole staff held Kentucky to a 202 batting average. I think they were 20 for 99 during the series. That's a lineup with a lot of veteran hitters. And of course, you know, they'd played TCU. So they had played good competition, and they came in, as you well know, very highly ranked in a lot of offensive categories. It had to feel pretty good to see your pitching staff hold down that lineup the way it did.
Yeah, we knew we were in for a big challenge. You know, Kentucky's a really good team, and their offense is potent for sure. And it's no accident. You know, it's not the competition that they play. They're just good hitters. So I think that it's a big boost for our guys to say, all right, that's the best offense we've had to go up against other than our own, which is really the reason why I think that we're more prepared, is because we have to get our hitters out in inter-squad games. So that helps us quite a bit. But yeah, it was – those guys are really good. Those guys are going to win a lot of games. And it's good, you know, like a Zebulon Vermillion to go out and have the outing he did against that kind of offense. He goes out and he's pretty dominant for 3 innings. So it certainly is nice to be able to see that as a coach, that some of these guys are able to do it against the highest of the highest level. So I know that the guys were excited about the way they pitched, and they should be.
Let's talk about your bullpen for a minute. You mentioned Vermillion. I think Brady Tigert, you've got something there on the back end, as you well know. Evan Taylor's pitching well. How do you feel overall about the way your bullpen's pitching? And I guess that would also include, you know, what you're getting from your pitchers in the midweek games.
Yeah, I think we've got a lot of options. I think it's the best way to say it. You know, with Zeb doing a really good job against Kentucky, that really gave us a big boost as coaches to be able to see him go out and do that. Cause everybody's always known that Zeb's certainly a good pitcher and he's a talented kid. He just had some inconsistencies, and you know, doing what he's doing right now, the last couple outings, the Grambling outing, and then certainly the outing against Kentucky is a big lift. And then you got some really quality strike throwers in there too, with Cole Ramage and Heston Toll will just throw it over the plate and be aggressive. So that's a good look for them. You got another like power arm in there with Mark Adamiak, who could be in the bullpen or could start in the midweek. And then obviously you talked about Brady. We're super excited about the development of Brady, and he's got to continue to get better like they all do, but he's got a chance to be pretty dynamic at the back of the game. The guy we got to get going is Nick Griffin. We got to get him going. I have to find a way. Nick has to find a way. We all have to find a way to get Nick going, because he's got good enough stuff to get out any left or right-handed hitter in our league. We just got to get him going. It's just been that's been the one for me that really needs to step up. But you got Zach Morris that had a really good outing against Grambling that really gives him a lift. And then Elijah Trest is kind of like, he goes out and he pitches well. So he's going to continue to get opportunities. And I think, you know, maybe getting Isaac Bracken back in a week. He had a little groin issue. So getting him back will be certainly a big lift to the team. So got a lot of options down there. And they have to continue. If you want to see like really consistent roles, and we have to get consistent performance. So those guys, it's a little bit on those guys. It's a little bit on us as coaches to just find the best place to use guys.
With Tiger in particular, what have you guys seen from him to be able to, cause that's a hard role to bring in a closer, but then especially to do it as a true freshman. What have you guys seen from him that makes him good for that role?
He's not scared. Like there's no lack of confidence for Brady Tiger. Like he goes out there, he thinks he's the best player on the field. And there's a lot of times that he's right. You know, he's really good. That's the big thing, because stuff it's not hard to see the stuff. I mean, it's 92 to 96 with a really good breaking ball. He's got a changeup and a sinker too, which is going to throw him a lot right now because of the position that he's in. It's been kind of two pitches, but you're going to start seeing him have to extend and expand his arsenal, which is good for us because it helps him grow as a pitcher. And I think Brady at the end of the day is probably, you know, could position himself to be a conference starter in this program. It's just right now, it's where we need him is the back of the game. But I think the real thing with him is just he's just supremely confident in belief in his ability, and he throws strikes. You know, he goes out there and pounds the zone. And he's going to give up some hits here and there, but he's going to also just be relentless in the strike zone. So you're going to ride the waves a little bit with freshmen, especially in that role. And it's incumbent upon us to put him in situations that can be successful for him. So, you know, we need to do a good job getting to him from our older guys, and they did a good job of that this past weekend.
How much was bringing him in Sunday against Kentucky the way you did an evaluation to see how he handled the moment?
I think there's always a little bit of that when you're not 100% sure who the guy is at the back of the game for you. And these things still evolve as the season goes. Like, he's doing it right now, but he's got to continue to perform to do it. We feel like we've got some other options back there if he were to struggle, but it's the same thing we did. If you look back last season on Sunday with Jackson in that role, we brought him in against Alabama with a 2-run lead to kind of just see, is this real what we're seeing? And Jack's got him out and did a good job there, but it was the same thing for Brady. You got to get a 6 outs at the end of the game with a 2-run lead, and he's got to go through the middle of their lineup at the end of the game. So what better evaluation could you have? You couldn't ask for a better evaluation of him in that role. And he was hooked up. He was ready for it. So I'm excited about Brady.
With Evan Taylor, what's changed with him this year? You know, I've heard Dave talk a couple of times about, I guess, kind of a come to Jesus meeting that they had at the end of last season. But what's changed with him? How is he pitching so much better? Is it the arm slot? Is it new pitches?
The slot change is, you know, something that certainly helped. It's a little bit lower than it's ever been here, and it gives him a chance to throw sinkers and gives him a chance to play his slider up. It's given it a little bit more horizontal play, and it's also picked up a little bit of carry, which is easier for him to throw for strikes, which is good. So I think the stuff gives you confidence, but it's really just the decision that he was just sick of it. He was sick of being just another guy on the team. I think he had to watch that team last year play really well and know that he was kind of, you know, potentially could have been like the missing piece in the whole thing, because it's a good arm. It's really good stuff. And, you know, I think Evan's a pretty tough kid. You know, he's kind of been through a lot here in terms of trying to make a bunch of adjustments. You look at Evan Taylor from when I arrived here, I guess that would have been, in 19. Fall of 18-19 season, it's like a completely different person in terms of how he throws. So he's made a ton of adjustments along the way to get himself better. But yeah, you could really point at the challenge. You know, Coach Van Horn challenged him, just straight up challenged him. And Evan's risen to the occasion. It's like, you want to see that as a coach. So I'm super excited about what Evan's doing for us, and gives you a really, really tough left-handed option to hit. And also a guy with stuff that can strike you out. So it's certainly a big lift for the bullpen that he's pitching the way that he is.
You guys seem to like him as kind of a bridge to the closer right now, but could you ever see him in that closer position?
Yeah. I mean, I could see him closing. I could see Zeb closing. Obviously, Brady's doing it right now. You could see Tress finishing games. I love Gabe Starks. You know, I want to see him continue to get better. Like, that's a guy that could do it. Mark Adamek has stuff to finish games. He's got stuff to start games. I just think there's a lot of dudes down there that are really good. It's just a matter of them consistently going out and doing it and throwing strikes and doing the things that they need to do to get people out. But, yeah, Evan Taylor could close for sure.
About this time last year was when my eyes were open to what Kevin Copps were doing. And you and I were talking at that time, and I asked you, are there any pitchers that you're seeing in your practices and your scrimmages? And you said you thought Heston Toll was coming on and might have a role later on in the season. Same thing this year. I mean, are there pitchers that aren't getting on the mound a whole lot that you're seeing in practice right now who are producing, who you might see more from later in the season?
I mean, you got to look at like an Evan Gray, who just hasn't pitched a whole lot, but when he has, he's done well. And he's been good in pens and he's been good in practice. And then like Zach Morris, the same thing, hasn't pitched a ton, but has really, really made some adjustments and has got himself going against scrambling. And, you know, those are the two guys that I kind of look at and say, we need to probably get a little bit more out of those two guys. And then the exciting one is how, and it wasn't good when he pitched the other day. I understand that, but Jake Faraday is just, he's going to get better. It's going to happen. He's going to get there, and it's going to be really exciting when he gets on the mound. So it's just a matter of time for him. He just needs to continue to show us that he can throw quality strikes.
You know, I think your staff has been really good with its command in terms of the walk numbers. The hit by pitches were a little bit of an issue, I guess, the first 3 or 4 weeks. They weren't as big of a deal against Kentucky. Is that a matter of do you see that more whenever you're pitching in cold weather like you guys have done? Or what would you attribute to all the hit batters early in the season?
It's a little bit of cold weather, and then it's just a little bit of just, you know, bad command, to be honest. Like, you know, you look at some of those hit by pitches, and we just didn't throw good pitches at all. Whether it was cold, hot, or whatever. But, yeah, I think some of it is you're going to pitch a lot more guys early in the season, so some of those guys' command's not going to be as good. Connor's a sinker baller that throws, you know, into righties. He's going to hit some guys. Some of it's just, like, kind of just bad command and just bad. We just threw some bad pitches. You look at the ones that, like, when you hit a guy with a breaking ball, that's just a terrible miss. When you hit a guy with a fastball in, like Gabe Starks clipped a guy from Grambling the other day with fastball in. Brady was trying to go in and hit a dude from Kentucky. And those are going to happen with your guys that throw really hard and don't have this like pinpoint command or throw sinkers and the ball's going to run in. It's kind of like cost of doing business a little bit. But I just don't think that I don't think we were commanding our off-speed pitches all that well at the beginning of the season, to be 100% honest. Like, I just felt like we would arm side a breaking ball and hit a guy in the shoulder, and that's just a bad miss. Cold weather has nothing to do with that. But I think you can attribute it to a lot of different things. I feel like I hope that we're past that issue, but time will tell.
You're right at about 3 walks a game. You like that number?
I mean, I don't like walks ever, so I'd like it to be lower, but
yeah,
if you walk 3 a game, 3.5 a game, anything below 3 points, like 7.5 in college in today's game is good as long as you're striking out above 10. So I think that we're doing close to that, which is good. And if you're going to walk 3.5 or 4 a game, you got to not give up hits. So the numbers that really matter to me are, if you look, WHIP is like a very important number for me. Walks and hits per innings pitch, plus you got to hit batters in there. At least we do when we statistically analyze that statistic. But that's the one for me, because it's going to be a culmination of everything. It's like, how many base runners do we have per 9? That's the biggest one. But yeah, the walks are just frustrating more than anything. Especially, like, you know, we've had some issues with Hagen over the, or in Jackson a little bit too, which is 2 out walks that kind of look like they come out of nowhere.
Right.
Those are more frustrating than anything, and those just explode your pitch count. So those are the ones for me as a coach that you just like pulling your hair out in the dugout, because you see a guy cruising and all of a sudden you're ball 3, you're a 3-1 count to a good hitter, and then you scatter another one and it's ball 4, and now you've got a guy on base, now you're in the stretch. It's just, those things are just insanely frustrating for coaches and for players too. They're not out there trying to walk people, certainly. So I'm glad that we seem to be commanding the ball pretty good right now, and we do some other things that mitigate some of the free passes. Like, you know, the hits allowed is pretty low for our staff. We do strike guys out, which helps us. So there's a few things in there that can mitigate some of the walks, but the walks are just insanely frustrating.
So what's a good WHIP?
Anything below 1.3. The 1.3 is kind of like the, you know, if you're looking at like getting into the postseason and playing deep into the postseason, if your team is below, you know, 1.25 or 1.3 or below, you got a really good chance. We evaluate on A3P2, which is achieving a 1-2 count or forcing contact within 3 pitches. If you're at about 70% on that statistic, you're going to play in the postseason most likely. If you have a good deep, if you have a decent defense, and you can hit just a little bit. Obviously, we do both those things really well. So if we can keep our A3P about 70%, which it is currently, I think 71%, and our WHIP below 1.3, anywhere between 1.25, 1.35, you're doing a pretty good job.
I'm looking here. Your WHIP right now is 1.17.
Yeah, so really good for right now.
I wanted to ask you about going back to Missouri. You know, you played there, you coached there. Have you been back since you last coached the game there? And what's this weekend going to be like for you going to Columbia?
Maybe I've been back to recruit maybe once. I've been in the area, I think. It's always cool going back there because of what you mentioned. You know, for me, it's about the city, it's about the people, and it's about like what that place means to me and my family more than it is about playing the Tigers. You know, two of my children were born there. That'll always be a special thing for me and my wife. My wife and kids are actually going to be at the game because they still have a ton of friends in Columbia. So that part of it's really cool for me. But in terms of just going and playing there, you know, a lot of the people that I was involved with in that program are no longer there. So I'm not going to say it's just another game because it means something to me because I spent a decade of my life there, but I think it's more about potentially running into some old friends and seeing some people that, you know, there may be one or two people in the athletic department that I still know, maybe seeing them. So I'll try to take myself out of the equation as much as possible when we're there.
You know, Coach Jameson, you kind of look at all the people that have come through his program. You know, I mean, obviously Tony Vitello's coaching in the SEC. You've got yourself. I know there are other coaches who have come from that tree, whether it be, you know, assistant coach or playing for him. You know, the players like Scherzer and Kinsler. I mean, it's a really interesting collection of people that I don't know that maybe he gets as much credit as he should.
I don't think that people really understand how good a baseball man that Coach Jameson is. Like, I just don't think that he, you know, I think it was like 9 straight regionals or something at Missouri and won the Big 12 championship. And I just don't think he gets enough credit. He's a big reason why I became a coach. I know that. And I think that Tony probably tell you the same thing. So I think that if you really just want to break down like a coaching tree and look at some of the people that have come out of there, you got a big league man. Jace Tingler was a big league manager a year ago. I think he's a bench coach now with the Twins. And you got, you know, Garrett Brochus has done so much for minor league baseball players as a lawyer. He was a player there. And then you got, you know, Tony, obviously everybody knows what Tony's doing at Tennessee right now. That's insane. There's just a lot of guys that have been in the program that have gone on to either play professionally. And then as before you even get to the pro guys, like, you know, Scherzer obviously is probably the headliner, but Ian Kinsler, Aaron Crow, Kyle Gibson, look at all those guys that came through there. You got Rob Zestrizny and Brett Graves are both pitching in the big leagues within the last 5 years. Peter Fairbanks, like, you can just go on and on about all these guys that ended up being big leaguers and playing and doing such a great job. And he had a ton to do with that. His fingerprints are all over that. So I wish people would understand how good a baseball man that he is. I think that the people that really know baseball understand it, but, you know, maybe the general population doesn't give him as much credit as they should.
Am I right that when you were an assistant coach in Missouri, that was your first exposure to Arkansas? Didn't you guys come down here as in a midweek game at one point?
Yep, we played two, actually. We lost them both, but you know, we played twice. The year before we went into the SEC, we had to face – I want to say that was the year where the pitching numbers were just insane here, like an unbelievable pitching staff. I think we didn't hit very well that year anyway, but we certainly didn't hit against Arkansas. They were close games, and the things that I always took away about that, and I think I said this at the initial time when I came down here to take this job, was like, we were just an okay Big 12 team at the time, and Arkansas was obviously, you know, what Arkansas is, a really good SEC team. And it was packed in here, and it was a lot of energy in the building. And you looked around and you're like, God, someday I'd love to coach at a place like this. But that was, yeah, Missouri was my first exposure to Arkansas, certainly.
Last question for you, Matt. I'm sure you've scouted Missouri a little bit. But what do you know about them hitting wise, and what do you think the challenge is going to be this weekend?
I think that they're a pretty complete offense. I mean, the team batting average is right around 300, which is something you always look at in terms of just putting the bat on the ball. They don't strike out much. So we have a challenge there because that's where we acquire some of our outs, and they run, you know, they've got, I think, 33 stolen bases as a team, maybe 33 for 36, I think is the percentage that they steal bases at. So they've got really dynamic offensive players. I think they have a good mix of kind of like a power speed combination and a couple of guys. The Josh Day kid is a really good player. We have our hands full with him, certainly. And the rest of their lineups is experienced and there's some depth there offensively, so they can leave the yard on you, they can steal a base, they can bunt, they can hit the ball into the gaps. And again, like, the one thing I always come back to when I look at teams and you're evaluating, like, how are we going to be able to, what are we going to be able to do these guys, you look for, there's got to be a hole somewhere, and they don't seem like they have a ton of holes, because usually it's they're going to strike out enough that we can get them in a situation where we can use our stuff to punch them out in big spots, but they don't really have a ton of strikeouts. So those are the things I always look at, being able to leverage the gaps. I think they've got, you know, 5 less doubles than we do as a team. So they hit the ball into the gaps. And then, you know, the stadium plays, depending on how the wind's blowing, it's going to play either really small or really big.
Our thanks to Matt Hobbs for joining us on this week's podcast. We'll be back with another Whole Hog Baseball podcast next week to look back at the Missouri series and ahead to the series against Mississippi State. Also hope you'll listen to our latest basketball podcast of Mid-America, as Scotty Bordelon, Dudley Dawson, and I look ahead to this week's Sweet 16 matchup between the Razorbacks and Gonzaga. You can find all of our podcasts by searching Whole Hog Radio on Apple, Spotify, or in most other podcast stores. That's three words, WHOLEHOGRADIO. Hope you'll leave us a review. It'll help others find our podcast. It's another busy week at WholeHogSports.com. Scotty Bordelon, Bob Holt, and others are in San Francisco to cover the Razorbacks' time at the basketball tournament. And, of course, we'll have all the coverage you need from the Razorbacks baseball series. For Bubba Carpenter, I'm Matt Jones. We appreciate you joining us, and we'll see you next week on the Whole Hog Baseball Podcast.
The proceeding has been a production of WholeHogSports.com. Look for our latest podcasts on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcast store. And visit us anytime at WholeHogSports.com for the latest news and commentary.